Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. The Science of Happiness is proudly brought to you by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Discover the latest findings in neuroscience, cosmology, and the origins of life at templeton.org.
You know, what we've experienced here with COVID, I think a lot of the world lives in that space where both life and death are very kind of immediate and, you know, it's not guaranteed. And so there's a fragility that is at the center of many people's lives and a precariousness that I think that we are only starting to understand. You know, there's places in India where I work where you'll see the mom not name their child for 3 months because they don't want to get super attached to that kid because there's a possibility or even a probability that that child might not survive. And so I think that there is a centering of the fragility of existence. I had a professor named June Jordan, and there's a prompt that she would give us that was a Martin Luther King prompt that said, "Only when it's dark enough can you see the stars." There's a lot of truth to that, that, you know, in the midst of burnout and overwhelm and seeing a lot of suffering, you know, compassion is a flipped side of that. Otherwise, I think you can be enveloped by the darkness. And so the practice of cherishing and drawing out the pieces of our lives that we're grateful for, I think, is such a crucial practice because it helps us anchor in possibility, in hope, in imagining a new world for ourselves and, you know, the communities that we're serving.
One of the paradoxes and enduring truths about life is that with suffering and loss come a reverence and gratitude for the things we have. I'm Dacher Keltner. Welcome to The Science of Happiness. Our guest today is a California doctor who spends half the year working in underserved communities around the world. Sriram Shamasundar is an associate professor of medicine at UC San Francisco and the co-founder and faculty director of the HEAL Initiative, a group training health workers to serve in Navajo Nation and under-resourced countries around the world. Sri joins us after keeping a daily journal where he reflects on what he has to be grateful for in his life. Later in the show, we will hear about what practicing gratitude can do for your mental health and your heart health as well. Sri, I want to thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I know there are a lot of different reasons that people are drawn to medicine, you know, the wonders of healing, the science, the clinical practice. What drew you to taking your career to these underserved realms of the world?
I think some of it comes back to where can you have the most meaning and purpose in your life. And, you know, sometimes I think about being in San Francisco and one floor in the hospital has more doctors and nurses than some of the communities in East Africa, the entire country that I would work in. And so you really think of, like, how do you make your life meaningful and useful? And I think it drew me to some of these places to serve. And then I think it also, as I've gone along, I think one of the beautiful parts of medicine is really being a witness to really crucial moments in people's lives, including threshold moments of birth and death, and really understanding the human experience at a deeper level. And so I find myself really cherishing those moments that are difficult and profound and surprising at the end of people's lives or sometimes the beginning.
So for our show, you chose to try a daily journaling practice where you write about what you're thankful for, a gratitude journal. Sri, tell us what you did.
Sure. So I got out a new journal. I cracked a new journal and trying to be at the same time every day. I would just write for about 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes it would be throughout the day because, you know, I wasn't on service in the hospital. I would take quick notes here and there. I was trying to just keep the practice probably once a day and for about 5 or 10 minutes and really noting some of the things that would come kind of naturally to mind about being grateful. So not necessarily spending a whole lot of time racking my mind, but just everyday occurrences that were powerful or meaningful or just simple and beautiful that I noted down or jotted down.
You know, you did this gratitude journaling every day for the last couple of weeks. What were some of the specific things that you wrote about?
I got vaccinated on the Sunday, and so I wrote about just the health workers that were working on a Sunday. And there's one entry I wrote that says, "For the workers who worked on a Sunday, for the unseen hands who created a vaccine in record speed, for the patients who never made it to the vaccine, for the county and public health officials pushing for equity and the vulnerable to have access to this vaccine." And I just mentioned the COVID risk to myself and how much death I was seeing. Like, I wasn't like totally sure that I would make it to a vaccine moment, you know? And so, and then there's everything from just the evening light, magical and orange and blue, the settling of the city when everyone and everything seems to embody itself perfectly. And that was like an evening entry.
Nice.
And even like the tree outside my house is a guest and is a great refuge for the many birds and the ants and the squirrels as it stretches into the sky. Even like the noticing of things that I know are in the background, but noticing just the other beings that exist with us on this planet and where they're taking refuge, you know, in this moment.
Wow. You know, we know these practices of gratitude, you know, they elevate vagal tone, they make you feel more optimistic, you handle stress better. But I'm really curious, as you did this over time, like, what arose in your mind and how did those images and associations build over time?
I think the most profound thing that came out of it was that the act of writing kind of carried, and the act of naming the gratitude carried into the next day and the next, where I became more aware of things in my life that I should cherish in the moment or I need to cherish, or I became aware that, you know, when my kid is laughing, like how precious that is, or, you know, just walking around the block, paying attention to things. And so it was almost like a muscle was growing in terms of all the things that I kind of passively am grateful for in my life. It became more of an active thing where throughout the day when something happened, I would take it in with much more awareness. And I think that was the almost like a coach who's unveiling or holding up a mirror to your life in a way that, you know, you have these already inside of you, but the act of writing kind of drew it out more and more.
You know, William James, one of our great founding psychologists in the U.S., wrote about consciousness as a lens, you know, and I just feel so much of the happiness practices that we talk about is like you get this lens and then it starts to sharpen and you see things that come into a little bit more focus.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that happens when you practice savoring and gratitude in particular is you kind of walk through the day and you interact with people a little bit differently. Did you sense any shifts in interacting with your kids or your patients?
Yeah, I think that that was kind of a side effect that I didn't expect, which was even in some of the moments, you know, all of us that have young kids, my kids are now 5 and 2. It's funny with our team that a lot of the single people are like craving for connection, and a lot of the people with young kids are craving for some solitude. Yeah, so everybody has their challenges. And so I think, like, for me, you know, when my son or daughter was requesting my attention, you know, it's just a slight reframe of, even though this is difficult and you'd want to be a little bit, have more solitude, it was just a sense of this moment is fleeting. So there is this awareness that all of us know, but it's such a practice to be like, if they weren't there, how miserable my life would be, or, you know, the gratitude that you have for their presence, it requires you to also lean into the boredom and the the mundane and, you know, the annoying.
The sleep deprivation.
You know, when I think about your medical work with HEAL and being in the places that you've done this work, you're really looking at some of the hardest living conditions that humans face. And it seems counterintuitive in a sense that you would choose to do a gratitude practice in the context of that work. So what got you to gratitude coming out of this work?
Yeah, I think some of the oncologists or the palliative care doctors are some of the most joyful people that I know because they are very much grounded. They're not in, you know, amusement park or Disneyland of like imagining that life isn't deeply connected to death. And with that urgency, I think comes a certain blessing of your own life. Yeah. I mean, one of my greatest privileges of my life and being a clinician and a doctor is to be around entire generations of health professionals, doctors, nurses, community health workers that just teach you not only about taking care and what does it mean to like really love a community or a patient or kind of go to great lengths to take care of underserved populations. You know, if we think about inequity across the United States, Navajo Nation is 27,000 square miles across New Mexico and Arizona and Utah, and it's the size of New England or West Virginia. And to give you some statistics, it's, you know, there's 13 grocery stores in Navajo Nation, and there's 162 in West Virginia. And so there's a certain amount of resource, what we call like a resource poor setting. But in terms of the family structure, in terms of the level of compassion and care for one another, the lineage, the really ancestral commitment to their elders, it's walking in a different way and seeing the world in a different way where you're tied to the land and your family and your ancestors.
Yeah.
One of the things that's so striking about all the places I've worked, oftentimes if a mom has to do some work in their home village, they will hand their child off that's sick to the next patient over, and the community will take care of that patient. And there's so many people at the bedside in a lot of these communities in Haiti and India, and oftentimes in the U.S., even before COVID, where there's patient restrictions or visitor restrictions, there's oftentimes, you know, people are dying in isolation. And so I think that's a profound difference, the social network and connection and the depth of not feeling lonely is massively a well-being parameter, right? It's a, it shapes your entire life if you have a lot of riches, financial riches, but don't have a deep sense of social connection.
It is striking how scarcity and fragility are related to gratitude and reverence, that we lose sight of that sometimes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, Sri, you've given us this powerful awareness of how when we journal and we write things down, it kind of shifts our thinking and shifts how we approach the world. Were there other shifts that the gratitude journaling brought about for you?
I think it recedes some of the things that are not as important and elevates other things that are more important. So I would say that it reprioritizes some of the things that just by habit, you know, that we get externally accolades for that actually don't make our life any more rich or nourishing. And so it, I think it recentered that somewhat for me. And then it also slowed me down because there's, in order to take in gratitude, I think that the pace of your life also has to come down a bit. And so I would say those two things.
What do you think is your biggest takeaway that you get from journaling about gratitude for a couple of weeks?
I think the act of journaling just draws to the forefront like the many blessings of my life. And I think that in some ways we're just being programmed in terms of evolutionarily like towards some things that make us fearful or negative. Sometimes in our mind, like the critical or the negative kind of arise as a point of focus. And so I think the act of journaling is a slow shift away from that habit pattern, because so much of what we can focus on, you know, whatever we focus on grows. And I think that's very true, that the more you focus on gratitude, the more you focus on the practice of gratitude in a very active way, as opposed to, you know, in a very passive way, that muscle grows. And I think that that's the start of what I'm seeing in my own life.
Well, Sriram Shamadasundar, thank you so much for being on our show, and thank you for the work you're doing right now.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How does gratitude improve health?
Will that reduce our stress levels? Will it allow us to rest more and allow our hearts to rest, particularly in people who have a lot of heart disease?
More up next.
We notice the negative things in life. It wards off danger and allows us to plan ahead, you know, to avoid negative outcomes and stuff like that. So it's kind of part of our psyche. But when people get caught up or it becomes part of their psychological framework, it can prevent us from noticing and appreciating positive things.
Laura Redwin is an associate professor in the College of Nursing at the University of South Florida. Laura and her colleagues wanted to see if having a more grateful mindset could not only improve mental health, but be good for heart health as well. They did an experiment with about 200 people who were recently diagnosed with heart disease.
Either they've had a heart attack, they have valvular disease, or they have untreated hypertension. These can lead to a very bad outcome of heart failure.
Heart failure happens when the heart isn't getting enough blood. In the U.S., half the people who have it die within 5 years of diagnosis.
So we were focusing on this group because it's a therapeutic window, perhaps, to stopping the progression to a worse disease.
Laura's team first measured how grateful these people were.
So we wanted to know whether people who naturally have a lot of gratitude, what they look like. What is their psychological profile? What behaviors are they doing? How is their sleep? What are their biological stress hormones?
They also looked at people's depression levels, mood, and sleep.
What we found was that gratitude was actually related to better sleep. They actually did have less depressed mood, less fatigue, even their behaviors for self-care, healthy behaviors, were better.
And they had lower inflammation, an indicator of a healthier heart. Laura next set out to see if she could direct people to become more grateful over time, and if that would lead to similar results.
Will it allow us to rest more and allow our hearts to rest, particularly in people who have a lot of heart disease?
They asked those questions in a subsequent study.
So half of the subjects were assigned to do 8 weeks of gratitude journaling, where they had to write most days of the week things that they were grateful for, between 3 and 4 items.
The other half of the group didn't do any journaling. Laura's team measured everybody's gratitude levels before, during, and after the experiment.
We also were measuring their heart rate and how it might change. And then we're also measuring their inflammation, since both of these things seem to be related to cardiovascular disease.
The people who didn't keep a gratitude journal showed no signs of a healthier heart. But those who did had lower inflammation levels, better sleep, and less depression and fatigue.
Even when people are sick or have heart disease, if they can change their perspective and look at those things, what are they grateful for? Or who are they grateful for? It's good to call attention to those things rather than ruminating or thinking about negative things that could happen and never do, or thinking about the past. I mean, gratitude also brings us, I think, into the present moment, and that's a good thing.
I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness. You can try the gratitude journal practice or other exercises like it on our Greater Good in Action website at ggia.berkeley.edu. We're launching a new initiative to explore how practices like the gratitude journal can support the well-being of nurses in particular. Learn more at gratitudefornurses.org. That's gratitude, F-O-R, nurses.org. Share your stories with us by emailing happinesspod@berkeley.edu or using the hashtag happinesspod. The Science of Happiness is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX. Our senior producer is Shuka Kalantari. Sound design by Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our associate producer is Haley Gray. Our executive producer is Jane Park. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining us. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness.